is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, is with me as my co-host, and we're very, very privileged to be welcoming Benim Bentalibu, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a man who understands the arsenal that Iran has sent into the world as a predator state. Within these last hours, reports from Jerusalem of incoming missiles from the Houthis in the morning and in the evening. Benim is here to help us understand what missiles, what capabilities, and where they come from. Benim, a very good evening to you. You've got a tweet up now. Everybody can watch your analysis. What's hitting Jerusalem now, and what does it carry? What is the threat? Good evening to you.
Very good evening to you, John, and greetings, and great to be back with you and Malcolm. Happy Nowruz, happy Persian New Year. Looks like the Houthis, which are now the most potent of the regime's proxies in this axis of terror, axis of resistance, are firing really high-level, state-level military capabilities at the only Jewish and democratic state in the Middle East. Based on the trajectory and what's been reported, these have to be medium-range ballistic missiles. And what distinguishes the Houthis in the constellation of other non-state actors that Iran supports and backs is that they are the only ones with medium-range ballistic missiles. These are missiles that can essentially go over 1,000 kilometers. And the distance between Yemen and Israel and Iran and Israel is about, 8 to 14 minutes, depending on the projectile and the angle that this projectile is fired at. Given what's been fired before at Israel, which is the Tufan, is Arabic and Persian for storm. It's essentially 2,000 kilometer liquid propellant ballistic missile capable of carrying a heavy warhead. In fact, it's capable of even carrying an unconventional payload. That's code word for a nuclear warhead. And this projectile can go up to 2,000 kilometers. It's based on Iran's THAAD, the G-H-A-D-R, medium-range ballistic missile, and it was fired at the Israelis several times starting in 2023 and throughout the entire 15-17-month region-wide war against the Jewish state. There's another projectile that we believe could have been fired, which is they call it the Palestine 2, or the Philistine 2. This appears to be a copy of a newer Iranian solid propellant medium-range ballistic missile. The Houthis are calling this ballistic missile a hypersonic ballistic missile. We don't know if it has actual capabilities to enter or re-enter the atmosphere at hypersonic speeds, even though most medium-range ballistic missiles do that. We don't know if it has maneuverability, but it's a claim the Houthis have offered. And in fact, if you look quite closely, it looks like a tweaked Iranian Fatah 1. The Fatah was unveiled about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, as Iran's first ever hypersonic ballistic missile. So the Houthis can walk and chew gum at the same time, fire drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. And the Islamic Republic is the entity that has helped extend that long reach of the Houthis into Israel. And all eyes are on the U.S. right now, which has just reportedly told the Israelis to stand down on responding to the Houthi strike, saying that they themselves would take care of it. And all eyes in particular on President Trump right now because of his tweet or message on Truth Social a few days ago, wherein he said that he would hold Iran accountable for the violence that the Houthis are wreaking.
He also gave a deadline of 2 months for them to act on the nuclear program. He held out some carrots, but I think made it clear that to the supreme leader that he wanted to resolve to dispute over the program diplomatically. But if that was not possible, then it would be resolved by other means. How does this play internally in Iran today? Does the Ayatollah have the ability to make a decision either to cooperate or not cooperate that will be sustained by the people at a time when the economic conditions are in collapse and domestic situations seem to be very bad?
Well, one reason perhaps why the Ayatollah and his cronies have not put out the full letter is that they may fear the consequences of non-engagement just as much as they need to fear the consequences of engagement. I mean, if they engage with President Trump, even though they are probably going to try to rope-a-dope him and play for time, they are engaging with someone who killed Qasem Soleimani. They're engaging with someone who stood with the Iranian people in their hour of need. They're engaging with someone who did record macroeconomic damage under max pressure. And they're engaging with someone who they said Qasem Soleimani's shoe is worth more than him. So it'd be a real loss there. And that's on the domestic side. On the flip side, of course, why it's important on the foreign policy side from Trump to Iran to give a firm deadline if diplomacy is still going to be on the table is that, and forgive me for making a plug for my new Twitter today, but I tweeted five reasons why this matters, is that first and foremost, it doesn't let the Iranians do what they always do, which is to play for time, drag out negotiations, and increase their capacity. Two, it actually shows that the U.S., despite being accused of unilateralism, has a keen sense of the diplomatic timelines ahead of it. There's going to be another IEA board meeting in the late spring, early summer, and then there's the timetable for snapback, the restoration of UN penalties against Iran, that needs to happen well before October of this year. Third, it signals an understanding of how weak the regime is. So, you know, consider Trump doing a knife and a handshake at the exact same time. I mean, today Trump made history. He not only issued more sanctions in the first almost 2 years of the Biden administration in his first 2 months being in office, but he also went after the first Chinese teapot refiner that had bought over $500 million worth of Iranian oil. Fourth, it allows, you know, the Iranians to take note of what the U.S. and U.S. partners are doing in the region. If you basically say, give someone an ultimatum and say, hey, come back to me in 2 months, and in 2 months' time you start seriously kicking butt, as the U.S. did by engaging in the first ever preemptive strike of the Houthis, that can change the regime's impression. And then lastly, given all the talk about great power competition, Russia, China, pivot to Asia, everything that's really been in D.C. since the end of the Bush administration now, he put the ball in the regime's court. He made the regime be the one to have to spend the political capital on engagement, not him. He made the offer. It's genuine. And let's see if he lives up to the art of the deal, which he himself wrote, which is never be afraid to walk away.
Houthis, do they need an order from Tehran to open fire? Are they independent actors? Does Tehran coordinate in any fashion with this salvo?
Tehran certainly coordinates. Sometimes it may call and say, turn on the fire. Sometimes it may call and say, turn off the fire. But the real art, the success of this axis of resistance, this constellation of terror groups, some of which were created like Hezbollah, some of which already existed and were co-opted like the Houthis or Hamas, the success is that they find local actors with local grievances. They turn local grievances into regional or perhaps even global grievances, and they give them the arms to shoot at the people that the regime itself wants to shoot at. So the real art is to not have to micromanage, and that's how the Islamic Republic has been able to project significant power beyond its borders. It meets with the Houthis, it trains the Houthis, it equips the Houthis, gives them money, gives them material, but it doesn't micromanage them. It doesn't mean it doesn't help with targeting. It doesn't mean it doesn't help with certain weapons capabilities. But really, it's not about the debates that we see in Washington, which make the Houthis look like a carbon copy of the Iranians, or the debates that we see on the far left in the academy that says, oh, no, they're a totally independent local actor. The real difference here is that when the Iranians say jump, the Houthis say, and if they say I can't, the Iranians don't slam the phone down on them. They say, why can't you? What do you need? What can we help you do to jump at a time of our choosing next? It's a really dynamic relationship.
Benham Bentaleblou, a senior fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Benham's work on the missile arsenal of Iran is revelatory about where Iran became the missile factory of the bad guys. Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor.